Well, one of the biggest gripes of voters is that political parties and politicians don't fulfill their promises. When it comes to elections, the manifestos are full of promises. When you look at election debates like the one we had last night in Indonesia, they make all sorts of promises. They promise to change, they promise to do better, they promise to be better. But to what extent do they fulfill these promises, and how do we as voters approach the aspect of political parties and the promises that they make at the time of elections? We continue this series with Asri, and joining us on the line we have Asri's Imran Bakas. Imran, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome.
Wa alaikum salam, thanks for the opportunity again.
Political promises, I suppose, is part and parcel of democracy, right? What is reasonable to expect from, as a voter, when it comes to promises that politicians make at the time of elections?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think it's part and parcel of elections. And I think across the world, you know, politicians make promises prior to elections. And we know across the world, in large part, those promises are not met. But I guess what voters have at hand is judging councillors and politicians by the extent to which they have remained connected to communities, you know, between elections. And in large part, those councillors that have served communities well, that remain connected, tend to get the vote prior to the elections. And South Africa is no exception. We see, you know, dozens and dozens of parties emerging. And to a large extent, most of those parties have had no connection and remained largely disconnected from communities. So I think that you're right. It's part and parcel of what we see prior to elections.
One is the fulfillment of promises, but the other is the nature of promises. I've seen quite a bit of criticism in the last couple of days of some of the promises that political parties are making. So many jobs, so many houses, we'll allow this, we'll do that. And experts then coming in and saying, but this is not even possible. This is not even practical. This is not workable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So there's several reasons why it would not be possible, right? And let's just start with what we know. We know there's a lack of state capacity, and there's a lack of capacity, particularly at local government level. And from 1994, political parties and government has made the mistake of taking some of its finest politicians and getting them to serve at national level. Whereas we know local government is the kind of central pivot in our society building exercise, but very often we have the least competent, and of course there are exceptions, but very often we have the least competent people at local government level. So one is that there's a lack of state capacity. Two is, like we all know, corruption is the biggest problem that South Africa faces, like many countries in Southern Africa or in Africa. And that's having a huge impact on the state's capacity to deliver. What we need to worry about is that there are some countries in Asia that have reached the point where addressing corruption might be detrimental to development. And what I'm saying there is, you might have a country where if you are building a whole number of houses, and if you know there's corruption in the process, addressing that corruption might be detrimental, because it's going to, you know, impact on the extent to which those houses will be delivered. And sadly, some societies now overlook the corruption because they say, well, corruption is a well-oiled machine and we need to let it continue in order for those houses to be built. So number two, I think corruption is a huge, huge problem. And the problem that is less apparent is that, you know, houses are not able to be delivered and sanitation is not able to be delivered, largely also because we have systemic issues. You know, when you have a liberalized economy that borrows from the World Bank and the IMF, the extent to which those governments are able to deliver is impacted upon by the conditions that come with those loans. So they are huge systemic issues. And we might need a whole program to, you know, unpack that and talk about exactly what that means. But I think for me, those would be the three main problems as to why, you know, many of the promises are not delivered upon.
Now, like you mentioned, and correctly so, when it comes to your ward councillor, you would, as a resident, be able to ascertain whether they have fulfilled their promises or not, because you live there and the issues stare you in the face on a daily basis. But if we broaden it somewhat, does the average voter, does the average citizen have the capacity to evaluate whether the ruling party in a council, whether whoever is running Joburg or Itikwini or Tshwane for that matter, whether they fulfilled on their promises? Because there it gets into facts, it gets into figures, it's more nuts and bolts. People don't necessarily have the expertise to make that evaluation.
Well, that's true. And it's also true that there are many, many people around the country who wouldn't even know who their local councillor is, right?
Mm.
Some people would know and would have the number for the local councillor and would know how to contact that person. They take part in participatory processes. But again, I think communities that live on the margins of society largely really don't have the time to engage in local government politics or participatory processes of government. So people have survival issues, people are disconnected, and they do know that, you know, delivery is not occurring like it should. But very often they don't know who the councillor is, and you're right, might not be able to evaluate the exact extent to which delivery has occurred. But I think they would know if something that's really glaring has not occurred in their community. You know, if there's dirt lying around and garbage lying around that's not picked up, if the state of the local library or the local park is up to scratch, I think people would know. And ultimately, I think there's a greater need for communities to become involved. We have a really sophisticated architecture for public participation in South Africa, but the sad reality is that many people don't participate, not through their own faults, but I think through a whole range of reasons that people don't participate in processes of local public participation.
What would you say to those who are very disillusioned, who say that, you know, I look across the spectrum and all of them lie, all the candidates, all the political parties, they make these promises and time and again they haven't fulfilled these promises?
Yeah, I mean, we do get some crazy, well, I wouldn't say completely crazy, but we do get, you know, some crazy promises being made. For example, you'd have the EFF talking about those in suburbs having to pay for municipal bills of those who receive SASSA grants.
Mm.
Now, on the face of it, that might seem like an outlandish comment by the EFF and suggestion by the EFF. And in large part, it's popular. A lot of the comments it makes are dangerous. Malema went about saying last week, I think, that people shouldn't hesitate to have 10 children. And in a country where over 60% of children live in multidimensional poverty, you know, I think those are really dangerous comments to make. But at the same time, there's an element of rationality, if you like, in what he's saying. We do have in our country, cross-subsidization that occurs already. We do have, in a society like ours, where the wealthy already pay more rates, for example, and wealthier areas tend to pay more in large part than poorer areas. So there is a level of cross-subsidization that might be working in some municipalities and not working in others. We also know that we live in a context where entities in local government that are making money tend to subsidize those entities that are not making money. So there's a level of cost subsidization. But when Malema tends to make promises, I think people view that with some skepticism, because we know that Malema is making those promises in a way that's populist, not really caring about the constraints of the Constitution or what is possible, but really making it in order to appeal to masses of people, despite the fact, or irrespective of whether those promises can be met or not.
All right, Ibrahim. Dr. Imran, as always, shukran so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.